It's time now for Inside the Dallas Opera. Here's your host, Suzanne Calvin.
Good afternoon and welcome once again to the program that takes you backstage and behind the scenes for an insider's look at the boldest and most exciting entertainment option in North Texas. I'm Suzanne Calvin. I'm delighted to welcome a special guest to today's program. But first, let me say it's not often that a stage director making their company debut earns the sort of gaga critical accolades showered on director Candace Evans after the opening of the Dallas Opera's 2007 production of The Merry Widow. Even the publication Opera News sat up and took notice of her, quote, flawless sense of timing. Miss Evans was already well-known to fans of the Dallas Opera for her stellar choreography on such shows as Ariadne off Naxos, Puccini's La Rondine, and later on our new production of Salome. She's also made a name for herself in this area as a superb Shakespearean director, teacher, and coach. So suffice it to say that wherever she goes and whatever she does, Candace Evans brings an ample supply of intelligence, patience, vision, and enthusiasm to the task. And I'm honored to have this chance to sit down and chat with you, Candace.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, you're going to be returning to the Dallas Opera this coming season.
Yes, I am.
You'll be serving as choreographer for Deflator Mouse by Johann Strauss Jr., opening on December 5th. But before we get into all that, let's talk just a little bit about your background. You are not from Texas, but as the saying goes, you got here as quick as you could. Tell us about that.
That's absolutely true. When I look back on it, I think, what did take me so long? Mainly thinking about the snow. I was born in Wisconsin and raised there. My father was a designer and my mother an artist. So I had a fairly artistic start in life. Lived in Wisconsin, studied in Canada, in London, worked in New York, and then came down here to teach at Southern Methodist University.
Well, you were trained really across the board as an opera singer as well as a dancer. I would imagine that's a pretty rare combination in the arts.
I think it is. I think so. As I referenced, my parents put me in a very artistic household. The Met broadcasts on Saturday afternoon were pretty standard fare. You know, mm-hmm. I marched around the living room to the Aida triumphal march.
Ah, you too, eh?
Yes, it's catchy, isn't it? Uh-huh. My vocal background, I owe to a really fantastic teacher. I was in a grade school situation where my principal was a solo singer and my music teacher ran a program for public radio in Wisconsin called Let's Sing. Basically, the program was predicated on the fact that a lot of kids don't get music training in their grade schools. Mm-hmm. And so they did a weekly show that was broadcast across the state. They taught us under the same curriculum, and every Friday the entire grade school would sit down together and sing for an hour, which is kind of astonishing, really.
Yes,
and she singled me out and said, you really need to pursue singing. And I assured her I was singing in church choir like all good little kids do. And she said, no, you need to really study.
Now, how old were you when she said this to you?
Third grade.
Third grade. So we're talking, what, eight?
Yeah. Okay. And my mom and dad, bless them, said, sure. And Wisconsin Conservatory of Music was there in Madison. I was very fortunate to be given great training right from the get-go. And I studied voice until I turned 13 when they said, no, just like boys, when girls' voices change, you must stop. So I did. But concurrent with that, I was studying dance and trying to decide which way to go. And both of those roads led to theater. So I tried to do it all and carried on with that through high school, studying all three tracks.
Who were the people that inspired you in music and dance? And it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody you knew. It could be somebody up on the silver screen or...
Right. Well, the first would be the vocal teacher I spoke of. Her name is Lois Dick, and she still lives in Madison and is a patron of the Madison Opera. Certainly, she was included in that circle. I'll include my mother. My mother was very wise. I think all mothers want their children to pursue certain things. You see gifts in them that you wish that they would follow. But she never said to me, gee, I wish you would. But she very cleverly stowed her tap shoes on the top shelf in her closet so I could see them but could not touch them.
Right.
And so it became something of interest and a little bit remote. And therefore
something to reach for.
Intoxicating, yes, exactly. Exactly right. I revered all the dancers that I read about during those years in Dance Magazine. I loved them all, you know, but none of them particularly, you know. I had a really, really, really wonderful dance teacher as well, a gentleman named Tibor Zana, who was Hungarian and quite, quite wild, scary, but demanding. And I think I would honestly say I wanted to be pushed. And the teachers that set the bar the highest were the ones that I loved the best.
So when did opera enter the picture? I mean, little girls of 8 or 9 or so don't think in terms of opera.
Well, they wouldn't, except when their teachers give them art songs. I was started on a classical track. I cannot quote exactly the first art songs I sang. I know the first musical theater song I sang was Hello, Young Lovers, which, as I think back, I was pretty young to sing it. But I was weaned on that, and that's what I heard in my home. And it's my favorite art form because it puts together everything that I've loved. It's the logical progression for me. Mm-hmm. Although I will share an anecdote that when I had to make my choice before I went to college. You can't major in all three and do well. And I ended up majoring in theater with a minor in dance and voice, because if you choose voice, there's not enough time for the others, and similarly with dance. But I was offered an opera scholarship, and I was a sassy pants, as a lot of 16-year-olds are. And I said, oh, no, I'm not going to be a bad actor. You know, I want to pursue the theater. Only bad actors carry on an opera. And I think it's God's way of putting a finger on me and saying, okay, then, now your job is to make darn sure that that isn't true.
Right.
Which, of course, it wasn't. But right. there are times, of course, that opera acting is overblown, more in the past than in the present. But I think it's my own little karma coming back.
Yes, well, the stand and deliver era of opera,
yeah,
I think, is
mercifully
long gone.
Mercifully
so, yes.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, you also serve as the acting and movement coach
for
the Dallas Opera's Young Artist Program. And that really isn't as obvious as it may sound, because it's a lot more than just acting and movement. Could
yes.
you explain a little bit about your philosophy of integrated voice, movement, and mind in a singer's construction of onstage character?
Absolutely. It's no different than that which an actor pursues. And I'm quite, quite passionate about that. There are a lot of people that see those as separate disciplines, and I'm absolutely opposed to that. I think any time you tell a story, the story has to be truthful. And the only way to tell a truthful story is to do it with your whole self.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as a little exercise for anyone listening, it's an anecdote that I give a lot of my acting students, is to say, when you greet someone on the street and you say hello, notice that your hand reaches to them to shake hands before your mouth says hello.
Hmm.
Your body tells the truth before your mind tells your voice to speak. This is true in any of the art forms, whether you are an actor with a text, whether you are an opera singer with a score. You know what you're supposed to say. Your job is to put it into your body as well as into your mouth. So to teach an actor or a singer to take the truth below their mouth level is kind of a huge thing.
Nur genau, Marzi.
Well, what is more important, the beauty of the action or the truthfulness of the action?
The truth makes it beautiful.
You
know, I mean, that sounds a little bit pompous, I suppose, but it's the gist of everything that we do in the arts, regardless of your discipline. If something is dead on truthful, the audience will respond. You walk up to a painting and you know if it's speaking a truth to you. You know, and not all art is truthful to all people, but we do know when it strikes a chord. There's the age-old question, what is art? And my answer always is if it speaks truth to someone, if it touches their heart or mind in some way, then that's art.
Choreography for a period piece like De Fledermaus, is that actually something that is more or less difficult than doing the choreography for a contemporary piece?
Wow, there's a challenge. First of all, doing a period piece, you need to be accurate to what would occur at the time. So there's a degree of research or, you know, veritas that you have to seek. So that's a challenge just in terms of your approach. It's a challenge to keep that from being dull as well.
Yes.
You know, if we're all doing the minuet nicely, you know, in a Mozart piece, then yeah, it's accurate, but does it elevate and does it speak to today's audience? So there's a challenge in taking historical truth and making the audience get it.
Right.
And
right.
be amused by it.
And you also have to deal with the audience expectations in a period
that's
piece.
Huge.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Well, or in modern. I mean, we just did Zalame, and although it wasn't modern, it was set in the 20s, but boy, is there a boatload of expectation to an audience coming to see Zalame. You know, you practically see them ticking off the count of the veils, you know, on their little abacuses out in the audience. So, you know, there's always a challenge. You know, I think the biggest challenge is the integration of the choreography into the whole of the piece. So it doesn't become, here's the music, here come the dancers, there go the dancers, here comes the music.
Nein, das stimmt.
When I come on board as a choreographer, I always ask the director how much they want me in the room. Do you want me there all the time? Do you want me weighing in with you? I'm always one chair over. It goes director, stage manager, choreographer. So I'm one step removed, but always there. One of my particularly favorite things to do is something I call frock management, because usually in the opera, people are wearing large coats and petticoats and capes and all kinds of flotsam and jetsam that they have to manage. And sometimes that's something that's very movement related, that if they just looked at what they were wearing, it would inform them about how they should be moving. You know, we look back to the dresses that our mothers or grandmothers wore, and they're very tight in the arm's eye. Mm-hmm. So how they carried their arms was totally predicated by their clothing. So that's a function that I offer to a director. You know, when I'm directing, I want the choreographer there with me all the time, because there's so much to do in so little time that the more able hands there are to reach out to the actors and singers, of course, in truth, personality-wise, sometimes you're better at speaking to the performer than the director, or the director is better speaking than the choreographer. Everyone has their own
dynamic. Really,
dynamic,
yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. That helps the communication. And so the more people there are to assist, the happier the family.
What would you like your body of work to tell the world about you?
Wow. That I was truthful. That I loved what I do. More than anything, what I love what I do. I feel so blessed to be able to get in there and mess with music and dance and art and all of it. It's just, it's a passion. And so I guess to look at it and say she really cared about this, and that it told a story, and from the performer's viewpoint, that it was a really happy family to be a part of.
Ah, summer. Time to relax with a good book. Enjoy a high-stepping night at the dance studio or the cinema. Time to breathe softly, think deeply, live life joyfully, and scale it back a notch. Winter is for business attire, but summer is for flip-flops. The Dallas Opera is proud to bring you Figaro in Flip-Flops, a jam-packed selection of sophisticated summer options and not-so-serious fun. International cooking classes, lively panel discussions, engaging lectures in unexpected places, classic films at the Inwood and on the big screens at Victory Park, learning how to waltz like you lived in Vienna. The Dallas Opera promises all this and much more. The 2008-2009 season starts in November, but summer starts now. For information, visit dallasopera.org. And among the events coming up this week, courtesy of the Dallas Opera and One Arts Plaza, our generous sponsor, on Sunday, July 13th, you can master Austrian cuisine at Milestone Culinary Arts Center on McKinney. Come and learn or just come for the tasting. We start cooking at 2 with the tasting at 3:45 p.m. Check the website calendar at dallasopera.org. Then Monday, July 14th, join me at Barnes & Noble Prestonwood Center on Beltline for Suzanne's Book Club. Obvious name, I guess. We'll be looking at A Nervous Splendor, Vienna, 1888-1889 by Frederick Morton. That starts at 1 p.m. The event is free. The book is absolutely fascinating. I think you'll like it. We have a free movie screening Monday evening at the Inwood Theater on West Lover's Lane at 7:30. It's the 1931 classic horror film, Dracula, with Bela Lugosi and an exciting new score by the legendary Philip Glass. Bring your friends, and yes, to answer your question, Fledermaus, of course, means the bat. Tuesday, July 15th, our most popular lecturer, Dr. Stephen Dubberly, will present a witty and enlightening look at this popular opera by Johann Strauss Jr. in the absolutely perfect setting, York's Café Vienna on East 15th Street in Plano. Reservations are required. Check the website calendar for details at dallasopera.org. On the 16th, bring your cushions, lawn chairs, and pals to an outdoor movie screening in AT&T Plaza at Victory Park. We'll be viewing Carmen, a hip hopera with a sizzling Beyoncé in the title role. It is, of course, based on Bizet's masterpiece, and it is free. Thursday, July 17th at 7 p.m., come to Salmon Center, dressed to dance. American Rhythm Champions David and Tammy Connor will teach you the ins and outs of the Vienna Waltz, and then they will present a ballroom dance exhibition, $15 per person. What a deal. Jumping ahead to Sunday, July 20th, we'll be celebrating that King of Vintages champagne. A special champagne tasting, just $15 per person at Dolly Wine Bar and Cellar in One Arts Plaza. What a lovely place. Come join us Sunday afternoon, July 20th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Again, it's only $15 per person at Dolly Wine Bar and Cellar in One Arts Plaza. Celebrate a taste of champagne. For details on these and all the events in the Dallas Opera's Figaro and Flip-Flops Casual Preseason Series, go to dallasopera.org and look on the calendar or give us a call at 214-443-1000. I would like to express my sincere thanks to Candace Evans for sharing her time with all of us. I really do hope you'll come back and do it again with us soon.
I would be honored. It was delightful.
Thank you. Be sure to join us next month when we take a closer look at Roberto Devereux and the bloody Tudor politics that inspired this opera. That's Saturday, August 9th, 12 noon, right here on WRR. And in the meantime, I'm Suzanne Calvin. For everyone at the Dallas Opera, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.